We've invented a new form of torture for our young people. They get to do Bible study with me in the first half of services, and then they get to hear me speak in the second half of services. I hope they survive. We went to Oconomowoc for the feast. We spent the first month after we registered learning how to say Oconomowoc, but it was on a YouTube video, so we had a good teacher. It's an Indian word that means waterfall. We had a good time in Oconomowoc. Not everybody else did, apparently, because I don't think they're using the site again. But we really did have a good time. We got to spend time with the Dillinghams and many other nice people. It's a beautiful part of the world, especially that time of year. And talk about the richness of harvest and the beautiful fall colors. We got to see the fall colors up there and then come back and enjoy them here. We were very, very happy to be there. But one of the delights when we were there was Tay and I came out after services. I think it was right before I bought the now infamous chair, but that's another story. We came out of, not services, we came out of our hotel room, and we were staying in the same resort where they had services, and we heard a very strange sound. I can't describe it, and I can't imitate it, but it sounded kind of like someone taking lug nuts off a wheel with a power tool or something. I can't describe it. It was a crack, 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 crack thing. And we were trying to figure it out. There was some construction going on. And we walked over to our car and drove past and realized that what it was a pair of sandhill cranes outside the facility. And they have a very weird but wonderful sound. I've heard it before, but not enough times to actually remember it, because we don't see a lot of sandhill cranes here, although there are some even here in Lorain County. But while we were in Wisconsin, I think we saw hundreds of them. They were in the fields, and they're just beautiful birds. The farmers don't necessarily like them because they eat the corn and other seeds out of the fields, and they're very smart birds, so they figured out how, my brother told me this, they have actually figured out how far apart the mechanical planters plant the seeds, so they just go like a sewing machine, and they just learn the distance and eat the seeds out of the ground, and teach the little ones to do the same thing. They're phenomenal that way, but we really enjoyed seeing them. I am a birder. We used to call it bird watching, but bird watching sounded too wussy, I guess. So we're now called birders. I particularly like birds in the spring because that's when they're easiest to identify. They have their bright plumages. But I always have binoculars in the car. I've got my app on the phone. I have books in the car, field guides for birds, because I just happen to like birds. And I like identifying birds. That's part of the game. And I like watching birds. We identify birds in a number of ways. We identify them by their markings. We identify them by their song. We identify them by their range, where they are. Like, you know, if you're in Ohio, you're probably not going to see a toucan. It helps you narrow it down a little bit. We identify them by their behavior. So let me give you a few examples here. See if you can identify these birds. I think you'll do pretty well. Here's a bird. It's about 10 inches long, has a brick red chest, very common in Ohio, has a gray back, often seen pulling worms out of suburban lawns. What bird would that be? Well, it'd be a robin, of course. Here's another one, a bird that's huge and gray, tall and thin, with a massive bill, often standing in water looking for fish or frogs. That would, of course, be a great blue heron. Every now and then, Tay and I will be out driving, and we'll see a large bird flying overhead, very dark bird of prey with a white head and a white tail. You know what that would be? A bald eagle. We do see them nowadays. And, of course, some are easier to tell than others. Some are harder. But there is another way that we identify birds, and that's if you just get to know birds well enough, if you just get to know a certain kind like a robin, and if a bird just flies past your head and you don't get a good look at it and you don't know what color it was, but you just somehow know that that was a robin or whatever, a cardinal or something like that. You just kind of know because it's acting like a cardinal or a robin. It just impressed you that way. And the what we call that in birding is GISS, G-I-S-S, general impression of size and shape. You don't always have time to see all the markings, but here's a description of that. We call it GI sometimes for short, general impression. And one woman wrote, well, it's based in impression, taking the whole of the observation and coming up with an identification that incorporates not only field marks, but also behavior, habitat, and any number of enigmatic characteristics that are difficult to quantify. In other words, a robin acts like a robin. It might have a red breast and a gray back, but the thing that makes a robin a robin is that it acts like a robin. Those other things are just guides to what robins are. We had an interesting sighting in Indiana on our way to the feast this year. We stayed as we get older and cheaper, we tend to stay at restaurants or hotels that give you a free breakfast in the morning. I do understand that there's no such thing as a free breakfast and that we did pay for it, but it's still nice. And this particular chain puts on a pretty good spread. You know, a lot of it is just pre-cooked and heated up, but it's pretty nice. And we've learned that we can count on that when we go to this hotel. Well, they had two kinds of sausage. They had pork sausage and they had turkey sausage. And we've noticed that this chain now carries turkey sausage regularly. We figure it's not for us. It's probably for Islamic people who will be staying in these chains, because we learned in the Lakewood school systems that, you know, that Christians can complain about pork, but when the Muslims start complaining about the pork, then people get serious and change the menu a little bit there. So at any rate, it was nice to have the turkey sausage, but the eggs were a Western omelet, and they were pre-made and heated up, and everything was very clean and very nice. The staff was very helpful, but I did take one of the Western omelets, and the minute I cut into it, I realized there was mystery meat in it, and I just left the omelet alone. There was plenty of other good food there. But as I was sitting there, a very nice-looking family walked in. It was a mother and father and a very nice young man, probably like 13 or 14 years old, and they go over and looked at the food, and I see the boy really checking things out, and I see boy whispering to father and pointing at the eggs. And I see father going to talk to the staff, and I see staff coming out, a very nice woman saying, well, I'm sorry, that's all we have. That's the only kind that we have. And they said, okay, whatever. And they helped themselves to the turkey sausage and other food and sat down. Well, remember feast stickers? That was how you told people who were going to the Feast of Tabernacles. We don't have feast stickers anymore, but that was a pretty positive ID. I was sitting in there, and there was a family fussing over the fact that there's meat in the eggs, and yet they're not vegetarians because they're perfectly willing to eat the turkey sausage. Well, there's so many people going to so many places that I did not butt in on their breakfast. They were having a good time without me, and I didn't want to do anything to change that, but I thought to myself, I believe I just experienced a sighting of a Church of God family right there, you know? And that's what I want to talk about today, a field guide to God's people and how we're identified and how we should be identified. And remember that there are very obvious markings and there are not so obvious markings which have to do with general impressions. A question came up in the 1990s, and this overlaps with Mr. Thomas's sermon from last week, which should shock him because he thinks I don't actually listen to his sermons, but I did, and it overlaps a little bit with that because the question came up in the 1990s, what is the sign of God's people? And there's more than one answer to that. And one of the first ones that jumps to our minds, and many of you know this verse, if you don't know this verse, you should sear it into your synapses right now because it's a very important verse, and that is Exodus chapter 31 and verse 13. It's a useful verse that we should have in our quiver full of things that we can use when we need to. Exodus 31, 13 talks about a sign that identifies God's people, that God himself gave us. In verse 12 of Exodus 31, it says, the Lord said to Moses, and then verse 13, you yourself are to speak to the Israelites. You shall keep my Sabbaths, for this is a sign between me and you throughout your generations, given in order that you may know that I, the Lord, sanctify you. Then it talks about how to keep the Sabbath and how to keep it holy to the Lord and the In verse 16, it says, therefore, the Israelites shall keep the Sabbath, observing the Sabbath throughout their generations as a perpetual covenant. So it's perfectly appropriate to say that a major sign for identifying God's people is the Sabbath. And it really is. You know, if you run into somebody, well, it used to be anyway. Nowadays, we're divided up into so many groups that we find ways to fight about keeping the Sabbath. But if you found someone who actually kept the Sabbath, you felt a real bond with them. We have a pianist at Baldwin Wallace who's a Seventh-day Adventist, and she keeps the Sabbath except when she doesn't want to. But the point is, she does basically keep it, and we talk about it. You know, it's a sign that sets people apart. You notice when certain people aren't there. When people are looking for God's church, God's family, God's people, one way they often start is by doing a search for Sabbath-keeping, Seventh-day Sabbath-keeping groups. And that's why on our sign out front, it mentions that our services are on Saturday. And we've actually had people come into our services who have driven by and seen the fact that we keep a seventh-day Sabbath. And that's what has alerted them to the fact that they're dealing with some of God's people here. It is a very important sign. But the argument then was put forth that no, that's not the sign, that that's what Pharisees do, and that it's more important, John 13:35, and you know this verse by heart. I mean, we sing a hymn about it, and it was the basis of Mr. Thomas's sermon last week. John chapter 13 and verse 35. My Bible says, by this everyone will know. In the older translations, it says, by this shall all men know. And that's a very grand way to phrase it, and I really like that. By this shall all men know that you are my disciples, if you have love for one another. And Jesus is very clear that that is a sign. That's how that people will know, other people will know that we are his disciples, if we love one another. Well, which one is right? They can both be right, is the answer. According to the field guide, you know, there are outward, very easy to see characteristics, markings that identify whether it be birds or God's people. And they're the easy ways to figure out who is who, like in the breakfast room at that hotel. Here are some outward markings, the easiest IDs for identifying God's people. Seventh-day Sabbath keeping is one. Avoiding unclean meats, knowing the difference between clean and unclean meats. Bertie Gaba, who many of you know, and I used to work together at Baldwin Wallace, and we were known as the ones at receptions whom the Jewish people stared at while they were eating the bacon-wrapped mushroom tops, because Bertie and I didn't eat the bacon, and it stuck out. We keep holy days, and more important than that, I mean, people don't necessarily care what days we keep, but boy, do they care about the days that we don't keep. After working at Baldwin Wallace for 24 years, this year I'm getting my 15-year present. Don't ask, it's complicated. I've worked there 24 years, but they're commemorating my 15th year of service. But it'll be during the Christmas banquet, so someone will pick it up for me. Trust me, it's not that great. It's a cross pen and an insulated lunch bag. I've lived without it for 24 years, and I'll be fine. But they will know, they'll call out my name, and I won't be there. Or your children won't be participating. They'll leave the stage when the choir sings the Christmas songs. I mean, there's other ways, and people go, that's the Graham children, you know. Or as one family said, yes, the Graham children, they don't come out till after dark on Saturdays. And I thought, well, okay, that's one way to identify them, I suppose. The rest of the time, they're hanging upside down somewhere in the house. God's people believe that God created the earth, and there's all kinds of room in that. I mean, we can still believe in the fossil record, but we believe that it's God's creation, and God's people know God's purpose and plan and how it fits into the history of the world and prophecy. Now, that's how most people would identify you, by the weird things that we do, the things that set us apart. I use the terminology outward because you can do every one of those things and not be a part of God's family. There are other people who do each one of those things, and yet we would not consider them part of God's family. More importantly, God would not consider them part of his family. And I'm not being presumptuous to say that. I mean, I'm going by God's own standards. For instance, I don't know if you're aware of this, but Donald Trump's daughter Ivanka and her husband Jared Kushner are Sabbath-keeping Jews, are Jewish people. They light candles and have a dinner on Friday night. They don't always do it. Sometimes they don't do it. You know, sometimes there's other things going on. But they are people who keep a Sabbath. And yet I'm not sure that they would be identified as God's people at this point. They will be someday. As I said, the reason that there were clean meats available in that hotel had nothing to do with God's people. It had to do with pressure that was put on from other sources. So you can do all those things. I know there are actually people, there are actually entire churches who keep every one of those things, and yet who will not speak to you because you are a horrible person. I don't have to name names. I mean, you know what the churches are. There was one woman who used to work at the Target store near us in Lakewood, and we'd raised our children together. We knew her very well, but she didn't talk to me because I was Laodicean, even though, you know, I kept the Sabbath and God's laws and things. But because most of my signs are outward and I haven't mastered the inward part yet, I would go to Target on purpose, and when I bought things, I would go in her line just to watch it play out how she would not speak to me and yet do the entire transaction. And I would stand there, you know, when she'd ask for money, I'd wait for her to say, I knew I was supposed to hand her money at that point, but I would wait. And she would eventually talk to me, and yes, I did it just to be perverse. I have a lot to overcome. We'll give something for our children who learned about prayer in Bible study today, something to pray for Mr. Graham, that he will finally overcome that kind of thing. So how do you tell? You can tell if someone is keeping Exodus 31:13. How do you tell if someone is keeping John 13:35? How do you tell the general impression? How do you tell when somebody flies past you that they're Church of God people? You know, when you don't get a good look at them, but just some sense tells you that they are. Something's going on. These are the inward things. These are the things that are more important. Although it's very important to keep the Sabbath. I mean, it's one of the Ten Commandments. Aren't you as puzzled as I am when I see people who want all Ten Commandments posted publicly, but who only keep 9 of them? God's people keep all 10 of them. The Sabbath command is a very important command, and it will be kept as long as we're around. So it's still very important. And yet, the love part, the inward part, is more of what makes you like God and is more an identifier for God's people. But it's not as easy a thing to see. So here are some ways to strive. Here are some things to strive for so that people who observe you will know that somehow you are linked to God and to what he is doing. And these are just general things that I wrote down, and you may have thoughts of your own that you could add to this. God's people believe that God created the earth, and so God's people love his creation. It's one of the reasons I'm so crazy about birds. They obey God's rules. They are gentle and kind. They do not knowingly steal or lie or kill. And of course, those things contradict. I mean, we're given that instruction in the Ten Commandments. They hold the family in a position of highest importance, both because the greatest joys on earth come from being part of a family, whether the family is related literally by blood or figuratively by love, and the greatest joys in all existence come from being in God's family. Because God's people are family-oriented, they honor their parents, and they cherish and nurture and teach and train their children, and the elderly and young are treated with deference and kindness and forbearance. God's people are chaste and faithful to one mate. We do believe in sex. It's a good and wonderful part of life, but only with a spouse of the opposite sex. God's people don't just rest on the seventh day. It isn't just a matter of keeping one day as a day of rest, but they also work hard 6 days a week because that's part of the commandment. You know, 6 days shall you do your labor. And they strive for contentment with what they have because we're not to covet. They worship God and rest on the Sabbath, which is and always has been on the seventh day of the week, beginning and ending at sunset. And this Sabbath observance is both a recognition that God rested after creating this age of the earth, so it's a nod to the past, and it's also a nod forward to a time, to a rest still to come, when Jesus will return to earth and establish God's kingdom. People who truly understand what God is doing also observe the holy days that he gave his people. And by observing those holy days, they understand even more about what God is doing. And they avoid days that have their roots in Satan's doing, such as Easter and Christmas. God's people live healthfully. They eat well. They eat in moderation. They follow simple dietary laws as to which foods to eat and which not to eat. And really, the rules are very simple. It's just you won't eat these things. You are allowed to eat those things. Those who are truly God's people are devoted to the telling of God's story and the growth of his family. We call that preaching the gospel. They also tend to enjoy the things that God enjoys, arts and pleasures that came from God's world to ours, the telling of a tale, the joys of a garden, the making of good things, the refuge of a home, the enchantment of music. The music we heard today reflects things that God likes. They help their fellow men with no hope of reward in this life, and they stay in touch with God through prayer. In general, God gives them strength and hope and health and protection and blessings, but God does not shelter them from all that the world holds. They must gain the strength that comes from swimming upstream, from resisting the wind, from disciplining themselves away from the distractions and evils of the world. And they learn the faith that comes from knowing that God exists no matter what tests may come our way. They know that death is something that none of us can avoid, but they also know that they will live again, and all that they have had to give up to live God's way now will be compensated, pressed down and flowing over in the world to come. And these aren't things that the world can always identify, but this is what truly makes us God's children, if we know what he's doing and we do our best to become like him. But we have an opportunity when it comes to field guides that birds do not, in that we can control how we appear in the field guide. We have choices. We can learn what is right, and we can decide to do it, at least when it comes to the inwards thing. I mean, we can't control too much about our looks or things. But people notice that you are different because of the outward, but over time, as they get to know you, you should be known for the inward. You should be known for the general impression. You should be known from the makeup of your character, not just the fact that you're not around on Saturdays, but the fact that from Sunday through Friday, you were one of the kindest, most encouraging, patient, righteous, wise people that people know. Of course, the problem is that it takes a lifetime to achieve that, and not one person in this room is there yet. It would be nice if we were the kindest person in our place of work, but it's not always true because it's something that we're working to achieve as time goes by. As the world deteriorates around us, it's more and more important to uphold God's standards and to be a light shining in this very dark world. And there's all kinds of ways that you can do it, ways that you wouldn't even think about that your light shining. I remember one time when we lived in Lakewood, we had made the choice. Our kids were little, and I know none of you have been in this situation, but we didn't have any money. And we made the choice that Taya would stay home and we would live without a whole lot of money, at least for the time that the kids were little. And I know many of you have made that same choice, that we thought it was important how our family grew up. And so Taya was home. We had a house. We had a garden. We tried to do things well. We didn't do things as well as we could have. And you always wonder what kind of impression you're having on the neighbors. I know our first neighbor next door to us, I was mowing my lawn on a Sunday. That in itself is phenomenal because Taya did almost all of the lawn mowing while we were there, but it was when we had first moved in, and the neighbors next door came and stood and looked at me and said, "Well, I suppose some people have to mow their lawn on Sundays," meaning, you know, we're good Catholics and we don't think you should be doing that. And I just smiled and did it, and I thought that was the kind of thing that they knew us for. But there was a gang of 10-year-old boys who roamed the neighborhood, and I had a 3 or 4-year-old son and a 5-year-old daughter at that point, and I thought, well, it would be nice if we made friends with this group of kids. We want them on our side. We don't want them to be, against us. So we tried to be nice to them, and it was funny how they would show up at our house from time to time. Again, you don't know what effect you're having on people, but I remember one time for the kids, I made the giant bubbles in the backyard where you use a loop of fabric and you use a pretty thick, gloppy mixture, and you make these bubbles that turn out 5 feet long. They make a horrible mess, and the lawn gets all slippery, and everybody just loves it. And we were there with our kids and friends their age, and they were screaming and laughing. And we looked down the driveway, and there's the four boys standing there staring at us like we're too big to play with bubbles. And I said, hey, come on, you want to play with the bubbles? And they ran up and did it. And it was kind of fun. So we got to know them. One was a Chinese boy named George. And George and Mike from next door were out early one Sunday morning, and they were just doing normal boy things. And George was standing on the fire hydrant, and somehow George slipped. And on his way down, you know that nut on top of the fire hydrant, his mouth caught it open. And yeah, it was pretty bad. And George was bleeding all over the place. And the reason we knew that this happened was they came and knocked on our door and said, George just got hurt. And we said, why don't you tell George's parents this? And they said, oh, we don't want to bother them. But I thought, well, you know, they feel comfortable here. They know that there's a home here. The first thing we did was take George over to George's parents so that he could get the right kind of treatment, because he needed dental work and other things at that point. But I've never forgotten that somehow they picked out that house on the street. We didn't really help them, but it was a house where when the chips were down, they thought, let's go to that house, you know, because, I don't know, they got some positive vibes out of that. And, we couldn't help them in any way, but I just have never forgotten that. As the world deteriorates around us, it's more and more important that our light shine. 1 Peter 3:15 is a verse that we all know. It's a very important verse, again, a verse that should be in your arsenal. And the gist of it's very easy to understand, but I wonder sometimes if we get the full meaning of it. 1 Peter 3 and verse 15. In my translation, it says, always be ready to make your defense to anyone. I think in other translations it says to give an answer. Always be ready to make your defense to anyone who demands from you an accounting for the hope that is in you. And of course, we take that as a mandate that we have to know what God's truth is about, and we do. We have to be able to tell people about it. We have to be able to explain to them what God has taught us and what he's doing for mankind. But I wonder if sometimes if we don't miss out on the other part of it, which is that people have to know that we might have those answers. And how do we do that? It isn't by our seventh-day Sabbath keeping, although that's important. It's by our love and our kindness and our patience and our hopefully wisdom. It's by God guiding us through our life that they have to see something different there and compare it to their own lives or what they see in the rest of the world and say, I wonder if this person could give me some guidance or some kind of answer. So it's important that we could be identified that way. It isn't the outward signs that are so important. It isn't the robin's red breast. It's the inward signs that a robin acts like a robin. It isn't the outward signs that are important. And I'll let Paul take this analogy because he nails it in Romans. In Romans chapter 2, Paul talks about this specifically. Romans 2 and verses 28 and 29. For a person is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is true circumcision something external or physical. So even Paul is using these terms outwardly. And of course, circumcision is among the most trivial of characteristics, not to the person being circumcised, but it doesn't really matter. It's one of the few things we know that we don't have to do anymore. It served a purpose. It's still a good thing to do for health, but we don't have to do it. That outward sign is not important. But Paul says, actually being a Jew, and what he means by this is someone who is connected to God and his way of life and his way of dealing with the world, that is important. But he says the outward things are not it. For a person is not a Jew who is one outwardly, nor is true circumcision something external and physical. Rather, verse 29, a person is a Jew who is one inwardly, and real circumcision, the important kind, the only kind that is ever really important, is a matter of the heart. It is spiritual and not literal. Such a person receives praise not from others, but from God. And that's what we want. I mean, it's important in this field guide of life that we could be identifiable to other people as children of God, but it is most important that we're identified by God that way. Because do you think this is a metaphor? Do you think I'm talking about an imaginary book? Daniel 12. And mentioned in other places in the Bible, particularly the book of Revelation. But there is a real book. And there is a real book that identifies people. We don't exactly know what the book says. But in Daniel 12 and verse 1, Daniel was told, "At that time, Michael, the great prince, the protector of your people, shall arise. There shall be a time of anguish such as never occurred since nations first came into existence." And of course, that hasn't happened yet. We can see possible signs that we're on the verge of it, but we're not there yet, thank God. "But at that time, your people shall be delivered, everyone who is found written in the book." The verses in Revelation mostly talk about people who aren't written in the book and what happens to them. But we want to be written in the book. And what is this book but something that can identify us as children of God? We think of it as something that we're judged by, but that's all identification really is, you know. What side is this person on? Where is this person's heart? This book of life is really a field guide to who is in God's family and who is not. And we have some clues, of course. We know what the commandments are. Mr. Thomas gave a sermon not long ago about some other requirements that Jesus Christ gave. Those were in Matthew chapter 5, in what's called the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5. Jesus Christ has a list, and it sounds an awful lot to me, like a field guide. Jesus says in Matthew 5 and verse 3, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Blessed are the meek, for they will inherit the earth. Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will receive mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God." And that's what the book of life really is about. It says the people who are written in it will see God and will receive everlasting life. So the book is important. The field guide for identifying God's people is both metaphorical and real. It's our job to pray that we would be in it, but we'd ask God to help us change our lives so that we can definitely be in it, and to thank God on a daily basis that we can change.